this is Judy Carmichael, and this is Jazz Inspired. As part of our 20th anniversary celebration, we're revisiting some of my favorite interviews. Today's with the late stage and screen actor Roy Scheider. Roy was a lifelong music lover, first falling for the heartfelt songs of country western music, and later for the joyful sounds of New Orleans jazz. Roy felt life is music, and in particular, saw a special connection between the art of acting and jazz. Roy Scheider and I started our conversation by discussing how music can bring you to emotional truth.
Musical artists cheat. They have the instrument, and they have a quicker way of getting to you and tearing you apart than an actor does.
That's interesting.
You know, if music be the food of love, play on.
Yeah.
Yes. I mean, Shakespeare knew that the quickest way to anyone's emotions was through music. And, you know, you talk to any of your friends, if they just hear two bars of a certain piece of music, it takes them back 30 years, and they know exactly what happened at that time.
Yeah.
Or what was going on in their life then.
You mentioned Shakespeare. Now, there's obviously someone with a lot of music.
Yes.
And other playwrights. Talk about that.
Well, I think that each playwright, in his effort to capture the mystery of the human voice, has a voice of his own, and he brings that to how he sees other people act. He takes their emotion, mixes it with his, and presents something that isn't quite realistic, but it has great truth in it. It's very powerful, whether it's Long Day's Journey or Hamlet or Pinter's Betrayal.
Mm-hmm.
And when you read those plays, for actors, you don't get it the first time you read it, and you don't get it the second time you read it. You may get it the third or fourth time. And you'll get it even better when you sit down at a table and just read and listen with other actors. And the playwright will tell you, if you're patient and your ears are open, the playwright will tell you how the scene should be played, because you have to listen to the music. You have to study the music. It's like with you when you want to study a piece for piano.
Mm-hmm.
You have to play it over and over and over and over and over again. And then the day comes when you say, oh, now I've got it. Now I know. And then you go and play, and you're probably playing the closest thing to what was written. But it took you that long to get there.
Yeah, it's very similar as you're saying this. I'm thinking about when I try something new with my musicians, and you're talking about sitting around and reading it with the actors for the first time, because it's the same thing. We have the notes, but we haven't made music yet.
Right, right.
It's when it takes off.
We have the words, but we haven't added the humanity yet.
Yeah. And so you're really listening for the different musical voice of each playwright as you approach that.
And the play is not alive until it's performed. It's just something in a book or written down. It's only alive when people say the words. For instance, we were in rehearsal for a play called Incident at Vichy a long time ago at the Amphitheater downtown, written by Arthur Miller. And I was watching the rehearsal one day, and Miller was in the third row. And someplace in the middle of one scene, he got up and he was walking back and forth and back and forth. So when the rehearsal was over, I went up to him and I said, Mr. Miller, why were you walking back and forth like that? He said, well, I was listening to what that actor was saying, what that actor was doing with my words. And he said, what he was doing is not what I wrote. I said, no. He said, no, what he's doing is better.
That's interesting, though. But that happens with music all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You can find it. I mean, I've done that in a recording session where I do what I think is the outtake. Then I listen to it and I actually like it better because it wasn't what I'd originally intended and I went off in some other direction. You think, how did that happen? But it really said something different.
Last night, I was watching a wonderful documentary on Channel 13. They're raising money on violin players. And there were several moderators. One of them was Ixop Perlman and another Frenchman who was commenting on a particular violinist and saying that, you know, what made him so remarkable was his ability his willingness to go flat whenever he felt like it. And he said, now listen to this. And they played a piece of his music, and the last draw on the bow was as flat as could be. But he did it deliberately for an effect.
Oh.
He just went, it had nothing to do with the rest of the music. I said, oh, my God, it works. That works.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, did you grow up listening to jazz? Was this something you came to early?
No, really. I grew up in New Jersey, and my brother and I, when we were 10, 11, 12, we listened to only country and Western music because my brother was a New Jersey cowboy. And that was easily accessible to our life and to our times. All that moaning and groaning and, you know, having the blues.
Now look here, Joe, quit acting smart. Stop being that old brazen sort. Don't you go sell this country short. No, no, Joe. Just because you think you found a system that we know ain't sound, don't you go throwing your weight around. No, no, Joe. Cause the Kaiser tried it and Hitler tried it, Mussolini tried it too. Now they're all sitting around the fire, and did you know something? They saving a place for you. Now, Joe, you ought to get it clear. You can't push folks around with fear. Cause we don't scare easy over here. No, no, Joe.
Hank Williams on a 1950 recording of No, No, Joe. I'm Judy Carmichael, and this is Jazz Inspired. My guest is actor Roy Scheider.
And then, when I was about 16 or 17, and we could steal somebody's father's car and drive over to New York, we started to go to places like Stuyvesant Casino and Central Plaza and Nick's and Eddie Condon's and go listen to jazz. And when I heard that, it just blew me away. Mm-hmm. I mean, when I heard original, really great New Orleans music, I said, that's me. That's where my heart is. So for two or three years, it was a constant going to these clubs. We spent our time and money listening to this music.
And just because of the emotion of it, you think that's what really hooked you in?
Yeah. And the amount of empathy you could have. And most of the musicians were black. They were great white musicians, but most of them were black. And if you understood or knew anything about their history and where they came from, the fact that they were up there playing with such dignity, such elan, such mirth. I was transfixed. I thought they were the most charming, elegant men I'd ever seen in my life.
And you thought about it at that age. You thought about that issue about them being black.
I knew they were different than, say, my father and his friends. There was like a secret club. I don't know, maybe they all smoked marijuana. I don't know what the secret was. But there was an unsaid language amongst musicians. An unsaid sense of appreciation of what the other musician was doing and how they would slide in together and they would play with their brother. And then their brother would play this. You see, when I talk about that, it gets me very emotional. Very emotional.
Yeah.
And there was a kind of peace and harmony in those musicians that I didn't find in my own family. I didn't find in my life. I found there on that stage.
That's so beautiful. That kind of cooperation and empathy, that's what touched you. That me too, when I first heard jazz musicians, that's what made me want to be a jazz musician.
Yeah. Why can't I be like that?
Yeah, because you see that beautiful acceptance, which I think really is what we all hope for and so seldom see.
Yes.
Yeah, that's beautiful. And it is about the music. And that's what's great, is that you know everything else falls away and it's about this pure thing.
If we can do this together, we can make a beautiful thing. And this beautiful thing will protect us from all the ugliness.
That's so nice. Do you feel that in the theater in the same way?
Of course.
Yeah.
And I could feel that. You could feel that a way. It doesn't matter whether the play is a tragedy or the music is deep and dark like Wagner. There is still the beauty within the darkness that is uplifting no matter how heavy it is. Or in a play, no matter how many people are strewn about the stage at the end. Hamlet is never a play that distresses me because there's always the one element of this man in this play who represents unguided reason, but there is a man in this play who is sympathetic, is loving, is incapable of being in love, but he is loving.
That's so wonderful. I've never thought about that till you're talking about this right now, but that's what always appealed to me, too, the first time I saw any actors on stage or any stage experience, that communication and that empathy that they have.
Because I got into the, I didn't do anything in high school other than the high school play. But the college that I went to, Franklin and Marshall in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, had a theater that I knew nothing about when I enrolled in the school. I transferred to the school. And the first play I saw there was Billy Budd, Herman Melville's play. And it just blew me away because of the sense of playing that was going on the stage. They are called plays. That's why they're called plays, because everyone is playing. And I thought that was a very powerful thing, and I wanted to be part of that. So I tried out for the next play, which was Coriolanus, and I wound up playing a very old Tribune, but I was good. and I found a home in the theater, and I continued my sophomore, junior year. I lived in the theater. I mean, I did my academic work, but my heart was always in the theater, and it was no question in my mind what I wanted to be, because I had found something that I liked to do. People liked me when I was doing it. I mean, that kind of acceptance, it's like music.
Exactly. Yes. It is.
It was my music.
What other musicians got you excited about jazz when you first heard it?
Well, it was the early piano playing of Jelly Roll Morton.
I'm Judy Carmichael, and this is Jazz Inspired. Today, as part of our 20th anniversary celebration, we're revisiting one of my favorite shows, here with the late actor Roy Scheider.
And then I moved on to Armstrong and Sidney Bechet, and then Jack Teagarden, and then moved into the moderns with Lester Young and Johnny Hodges, and then on to Sinatra, And then when bebop came, I was completely confused.
Totally. Everyone confused. Was confused.
Wow. I remember I used to think, what is this stuff? I feel a little differently now. Thank you.
talk about Frank Sinatra. I always, being an actor yourself, and the fact that he, boy, when he sang a tune, it was sung.
Well, Frank was, I mean, Mr. Sinatra was probably the finest acting pop singer that we've ever had. I brought along one piece that I thought was really special, him singing Angel Eyes. Mm. And it's so melancholic and so blue and so down and out. And he just exemplifies unrequited love. He's the Romeo of all singers. And it's easy to see why both men and women adore him the same way, because most people don't have necessarily happy love lives. They just don't. And so a singer like Frank, who's a great musician and a great ear for phrasing, could take a song and break your heart.
Hey, drink up, all you people, and order anything you see. Have fun, you happy people. The drink and the laughs on me. Try to think that love's not around. Still, it's uncomfortably near. My old heart ain't gaining any ground, because my angel eyes ain't here. Angel eyes, that old devil sent, they glow unbearably bright. Need I say that my love's misspent? Misspent with angel eyes tonight. So drink up, all of you people. Order anything you see. And have fun. Drink and the laughs on me. Pardon me, but I gotta run. The fact's uncommonly clear. I gotta find who's now the number one, and why my angel eyes ain't here. Excuse me while I disappear.
I'm Judy Carmichael, and this is Jazz Inspired. My guest is actor Roy Scheider. Do you think his being an actor made him a better singer?
No, I think his being a singer made him a better actor.
Interesting.
Because he started as a singer.
Mm-hmm.
And what he tried to do, even when he played with Tommy Dorsey or he sang with those early bands, what made him different was he wasn't rushing through the song.
Mm.
He was sitting on notes.
Caressing them.
And caressing them and caressing you. and making you say, he's saying, I'm like you. I feel as you do. And it makes me sad. So that's the basis of his acting. And the good directors knew that. I mean, I've been watching The Manchurian Candidate, the Frankenheimer version,
right,
because I've seen the other one. And it made me laugh because Denzel Washington, who's a friend of mine, said in an interview, oh, I didn't watch the original. We didn't watch the original. And I'm watching the original, and I'm watching a scene that I just seen him play the night before, and I'm listening to Frank Sinatra. Hey, it's strange. They both have the same line readings. It's very... No, Denzel, you didn't listen at all. No, no.
They've all said they didn't see it.
It's
I've
like
seen
musicians who say,
yet.
Oh, I never listened to him.
I know.
You know, it's what one of the great theater critics, a great literary critic, Harold Bloom, says that all artists suffer from the agony of inheritance, or an agony of, may not have that right,
uh-huh,
but he is saying that all artists, whether they're writers or sculptors or musicians, have only two choices to do with the geniuses that preceded them. They either hate them and try to destroy them, or they admit that they've been influenced. That's right, the agony of influence.
Ah, the agony
See,
of influence, that's beautiful.
That's his theory. It's a great theory, the agony of influence. You either say, okay, I'm stealing from this artist because they're the best, and I'm adding this. Or my work has nothing to do with this man. I've been nothing.
We've got nothing in common, just nothing in common,
my darling at all. The best part.
Can't stand the opera. I like music that bops.
We're not fated, not heaven created.
We're really mismated. Our chances are small.
Let's part, be real smart, and not start with this romance.
Cause outside of both having stars in our eyes,
and outside of sighing the same kind of sighs,
we've got nothing in common at all. We've got nothing in common. Just nothing in common.
Never could laugh. I love Picasso. He's all style and he's all flair.
I've seen Picasso and I think he's a square. Our two goals are apart as the poles are.
As lovers our roles are. Miscast.
Let's make a clean break and not take any chances.
Cause outside of thinking you're something divine,
and outside of wanting your lips close to mine,
we've got nothing in common.
A 1958 recording of Frank Sinatra and Keeley Smith.
Waiter, separate checks.
Well, you've said everything's music. I've heard you say that before, that everything in life is music.
It is. I mean, even this room, the silence of this room,
mm,
and the sound of our voices in the silence of this room is musical. As an actor, when I study a part, I think I've said, when the music sounds right to me, then I know I'm getting close.
Mm.
I'm getting close.
Do you use music as an inspiration for you? If you're working on something, would you listen to music? Like before we started talking now, I love that. You wanted to listen to some music,
yes, yes,
to get you in,
yes,
the mood.
Yes. Some authors, some playwrights make you want to listen to discordant music. You know, music that's not comfortable to listen to. It's twisted. It's perverted. It's strange. And others want you to listen to something very soft and very lovely and I mean, Chekhov, I can't imagine playing New Orleans music to. But I can't imagine Swan Lake or something like that.
Very
something very simple and beautiful to listen,
yeah,
to.
Yeah, yeah. So you would use it like that, yeah, to sort of get you in, yeah, that space. The Slovenian Radio Symphony playing Swan Lake Suite, Opus 20. I'm Judy Carmichael, and this is Jazz Inspired. I'm Judy Carmichael, and this is Jazz Inspired. Our show is made possible in part with generous support from Steinway & Sons. Additional support is provided by Jazz Times Magazine, providing entertaining and provocative coverage of the jazz scene since 1970. On the web at jazztimes.com. For a schedule of upcoming programs, visit our website at jazzinspired.com. You can listen to podcasts of Jazz Inspired on Apple Music or wherever you get your podcasts, and email us at info@jazzinspired.com or visit us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Stride Queen. Although we broadcast on NPR stations, we are an independent production, not funded by NPR. We're funded primarily by your donations, so please visit jazzinspired.com to chip in. No gift is too small. As part of our 20th anniversary celebration, we're revisiting some of my favorite interviews. Today's with the late stage and screen actor, Roy Scheider.
It's a song that Jack Teagarden sang. And he sang a song called 100 Years from Today.
Mm-hmm.
And the lyrics go something like this. Don't save your kisses. Pass them around. You won't need them because 100 years from today, who'll know?
Right.
Who'll know? I mean, I forgot the lyrics now. But I just find them so moving.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's saying, you know, don't hesitate to love. Don't hesitate to be warm. Because 100 years from today, who's going to know? Who's going to know? Don't waste the time. Do it now. Do it now.
Life is such a great adventure. Learn to live it as you go. No one in the world can censure what we do here below. Don't save your kisses, just pass them around. You'll find my reason is logically sound. Who's going to know that you passed them around 100 years from today? Why crave a penthouse that's fit for a queen? You're near heaven on Mother's dream. If you had millions, what would they all mean? 100 years from today. So laugh and sing, make love the thing, be happy while you may. There's always one beneath the sun who's bound to make you feel that way. The moon is shining, and that's a good sign. Cling to me closer, say you'll be mine. Remember, darling, we won't see it shine 100 years from today. 100 years from today.
I love this because all the things that you're talking about that you really connect with with the music and the lyrics and things like that are all about this deep emotional character and all the things that I would imagine made you want to be an actor.
Yes.
That's what you're
yes.
interested in.
Yes.
So
yes.
it's, I heard Norma Teagarden, do you know who that is?
No.
Jack's sister, years ago, and someone had recommended that I go hear her
and
playing in San Francisco.
What does she play?
Plays piano. She
oh.
used to play for him.
Oh,
sometimes.
Goodness.
And it was so moving for me, I'm thinking as you're talking about this, because here was this very old woman. I mean, she was in her, I want to say mid-80s, mm-hmm. but she might have been older. And she was, you know, made some mistakes and things like that because she had a little arthritis.
Yes, yes.
But it was the real deal, and I started crying. I was there. This is a long time. I was probably in my early 30s, and I just was mesmerized by this and went up to her and told her how much it meant to me that I'd gotten to hear her. But here was somebody that I didn't even know about except on record, but somebody said, go hear her. But that authenticity and the fact that she was playing right from her heart, to be able to connect to that right away. That's just... Mm.
Well, what was that film about, the Cuban music? Remember the old guy who plays the piano in that thing, who had not seen a piano for like 20 years? And they finally gave him a piano back, and could he play? Oh.
That ability to connect immediately to the heart that I think is what we're all trying to go for, and so many people can't do it, especially now. It seems like it's harder now because everything's so glib and commercial
and fast.
Because it is about, as you were talking about Frank Sinatra, it is that thing about caressing it and really listening, which for an actor has to be. You feel some actors aren't even listening to what they're saying.
No.
They're speeding through it, and that's a big difference. Which do you prefer, movies or stage, or do you have a preference? It's so different.
I don't have a preference. The stage is immediately more gratifying because you get the applause and you're there, and it's that moment. The movies, you have to wait 7 months until the film comes out, and there's nobody to applause. It's silent.
It seems harder to me as you're describing how you relate these things to music. And, of course, I'm looking at this as a jazz musician. Mm-hmm. I imagine being on stage, and I think you get your chorus going.
Yes.
And you're playing off the other people, and it's going, and it's going. Of course, there's an intermission. You walk off stage, all of that. But a movie, that seems tough. That
it's
seems
tough.
Like you're raising yourself up to play four measures. Now you're resting for 3 hours.
It's just short spurts.
Yeah.
And the hardest thing is keeping yourself together all day.
Yeah.
Saying to yourself, okay, now I have to go to lunch, but I don't want to make too much of this because I got to stay in the mood for what I have to do at 1 o'clock.
Yeah.
And that's more important. So I'm not going to go sit at the table with all these the crew and everybody and just talk for an hour. I'm going to eat something quickly and I'm going to go to my room and stay in this mood, stay in this rhythm, stay in this sound so I can replicate it when I get back on the sound stage. So that's just conserving your energy, which you have to do in movies because you don't have a steady line like you have. Once the curtain opens, it's yours. It's not the playwrights, it's not the directors, it's yours. And you act and you act and you react to the audience, what they feed you and what you feed them. But you don't have that. And you're only acting to a camera in the movies. But you still have to have that sense of, what am I creating? What kind of music am I creating?
It's interesting that you're saying this, too, because I know I've been in situations where I only have 8 measures, and that's my spot.
Right.
And the challenge is to not go crazy
yes.
with those eight
yes.
measures and say, stay cool.
Yeah.
This is eight measures. Make them really not.
Play it the way you did before.
Yeah. Is it the same
it's
thing?
It's the same thing. You say, you know, they always say that, you know, whether it's in the movies or on the stage, if you can get 80% of what you got in rehearsal, that's good.
Oh, that's
And if you're lucky, if you find something that spurs you, usually spurs you in a little different direction of the material, you may be able to go above 100 because you get inspired and something happens. But magic doesn't happen all the time.
Right.
You hope it does, but it doesn't happen all the time.
Right, yeah. right. And that, so it's very other, similar.
The other times you want to be certainly competent and very good.
Did you want to be a musician growing up? I mean, did you ever think about
no,
that?
No, I never felt that I was musically talented.
Mm.
Both my mother and father sang. My mother had a lovely alto voice, and she could harmonize anything. And I grew up listening to her singing every popular song of the 30s and the 40s while she ironed. She sang the words, and she knew them all. So that was always her, like the sound of her singing. And I never had that natural ability to sing. And I was always shy about that. Even now, my wife Brenda has a beautiful voice, and it's one of the reasons I married her. And I complain a lot that she doesn't sing enough.
And you heard it here on the radio,
yes,
Brenda.
Yeah,
sing
yeah,
more.
Sing more, sing more.
But did you take any piano lessons
no,
or anything like
no.
that?
It just wasn't encouraged mm-hmm, in my family. Mm-hmm. There was no artistic inspiration there. So it never even occurred to me to say I would like guitar lessons or anything
right.
like that. No.
Right.
No.
I think that's a lot of it if your parents play or there's music around the house,
it
seems like a more natural thing. But had anybody done any acting?
No.
So that was something you took off on your own.
Well, my mother was from the Irish section of Newark and my father was from the German section. And when they went to get married, my mother's priest refused to marry her to my father, a German Protestant. So they were very upset. But a couple of weeks later, they took their witnesses and they drove over to New York in Manhattan and they got married in the little church around the corner, which is the Actors' Chapel.
Oh,
that's my only connection.
Oh, that's a wonderful story. That's great. That's great. Well, do you still go out and hear music? Do you have time?
Not much. I live out here in Sag Park.
Yeah.
But I go to jazz concerts now and then.
You do?
And I do the local chamber music. Mm-hmm. And I did jazz at Jennings. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I listen to the radio. I listen to you. I listen to this station. And now my son brings a whole new music into the family and brings a whole new appreciation and of certain artists that I perhaps I'm not familiar with, he now acquaints me with.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of keeps me up to date.
You know? Do you feel like you're open to those things?
Not always, no.
Mm-hmm.
I can be.
But you try.
I try.
And do you still ever listen to any country western? Because
that's
what
you
started out with.
Oh, yes.
That's what I thought. We discovered we're both some western swing
fans. Hank Williams can still tear me up.
And those great song titles. You told me a song title you liked.
My favorite is It Drives Me Crazy, But It Keeps Me From Going Insane.
Yeah. I love that. And mine is the When the Wrong One Loves You Right.
Oh.
That's a good. Doesn't that hurt?
Wow.
Now, did you ever get into any of the bebop people once you got over the shock of the music changing? Were there any of those people that you liked?
I never got any higher than the Modern Jazz Quartet and some of Miles Davis stuff.
Now, that's very atmospheric
and
dramatic.
Yes, but it's not as wild as what we have now. Now it's really off the wall.
Right, but I mean in terms of appealing to you, because I know Miles is very, a lot of his music, seems like a movie soundtrack to me.
Yes,
you know, it just
yes.
has that kind of feel to
but
it.
But again, see, he's underlying, he has a sweetness.
Oh, yeah.
And a melancholy and a sad song to sing.
friend of yours, Blythe Danner, is a big Bill Evans fan. Are you?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Evans. When
genius.
You said sweet but melancholy.
Genius.
There's another one.
Tony Bennett is a wonderful, still a wonderful singer.
Yeah. Now, he's another one that seems like he's singing right to you.
Yes, yes. And I remember when he was a laughingstock. I mean, my friends who thought they knew all about me used to laugh at Tony Bennett.
And why was that?
Because he was this kind of lowbrow nightclub singer who just had no particular appeal, seemed like a third-rate Frank Sinatra. But then he developed as an artist, and he began to take his time, and he began to sing jazz, sing more songs where he was the actor and not just the singer.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he learned a lot from Frank, and he learned a lot from all the other singers around him. Until now, he has his own inimitable style.
And it took him a while. I mean,
yes,
it's interesting because it happened relatively late.
I watched
late.
That whole career.
Yeah.
I watched him make the turnaround. And now you say Tony Bennett, you go, oh, yeah, Tony Bennett, big time, big time.
Chicago, Chicago, that toddling town. Chicago, Chicago, I'll show you around. Bet your bottom dollar you lose the blues in Chicago. Chicago, the town that Marty Fay could not shut down. On State Street, that great street, I just want to say, they do things that they don't do on Broadway. Say, they have the time of their life. I saw a man, he danced with his wife in Chicago. Time of their life. I saw a man, he danced with his wife in Chicago. In Chicago. In Chicago.
I love that you say jazz, because I always say that to people, and many people say, oh, no, Tony Bennett, I don't think of him having anything to do with jazz. And I know I always think of him with the Tony Bennett with the bassy things.
The timing,
and how he's
timing. Oh, yeah.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah.
And he considers one of his biggest influences Art Tatum. Isn't that interesting?
Oh, yes.
Talking about inspiration.
Oh.
Tony Bennett feels that Art Tatum was a big inspiration of his.
Yes.
I think a lot of people wouldn't.
And you know what? I heard Placido Domingo being interviewed one time on National Public Radio, and they asked him who his favorite singer was. I thought he was going to name some, you know, some opera guy from Hungary or something. And he said, Frank Sinatra.
Oh.
And the interviewer said, well, why do you like Frank? He said, well, because he has a remarkable ability. When he sings, he ends a phrase, but it doesn't really end. The silence continues. He continues in the silence.
Ooh.
It got very strange. But that's what he hears when he listens to Sinatra. He hears that emotion continued.
Isn't that wonderful?
Because
that would be what you'd strive for as an actor.
Yes.
Exactly. Yes. Otherwise, it would just be line readings.
Yes. Is that he hits emotional notes that just lay in the air.
Oh,
and that's what he loved
wonderful.
About Sinatra.
That,
it's like when they asked Baryshnikov who his favorite dancer was. He said, you're kidding. Same thing. Well, who is your favorite dancer? He said, Fred Astaire. He said, you rather dance like Fred Astaire than the way you dance? He said, of course. So would every dancer I ever met. Wish they could dance like Fred Astaire.
Mm-hmm. Lenox Avenue, on that famous thoroughfare, with their noses in the air, high hats and colored collars, white spats and $15, spending every dime for a wonderful time. If you're blue and you don't know where to go to, why don't you go where Harlem lives? Putting on the ribbon, spangled gowns upon the bevy of high brown from down the levee, all misfits. Putting on the ribbon, that's where each and every Lulu Bell goes. Every Thursday evening with her swell bows, rubbing elbows, come with me and we'll attend their jubilee and see them spend their last 2 bits. Putting on the ribbon.
Boys, look at that man putting on that wrist. You look at him, I can.
You're blue and you don't know where to go to. Why don't you go where Harlem sits? Putting on the Ritz. Spangled gowns upon the bevy of high browns from down the levee, all misfits. Putting on that certain Ritz. That's where each and every Lulu Bell goes. Every Thursday evening with her swell foes. Rubbing elbows, come with me and we'll attend their jubilee and see them spend their last 2 bits putting on the wrist. Come with me and we'll attend their jubilee and see them spend their last 2 bits putting on the wrist.
I'm Judy Carmichael, and this is Jazz Inspired. My guest, the late Roy Scheider, talked about using silence in acting.
It's like the umming that you do when you're meditating. There are not four sounds. It's not O, H, M. There's the silence before and the silence after. So there are really four sounds.
That's interesting. Yeah, it took me, I know, a long time to be comfortable with silence between the notes, between the phrases. Mm. That was a conscious challenge that I knew I need to calm down with my music and let it breathe and things like that. And was that something when you were beginning acting?
When I first started to act, I never went to any acting classes per se, but I went to some late night scene study classes that Harold Corman used to have in the Stella Adler studio. And I remember one night Harold was talking about times on the stage when you do nothing, when you are in repose. I don't know if that's the correct word, but there are times when in your life when you don't move and you don't say anything, you just listen. You make a special kind of music when you just listen. You provide a space for the other music to come through. And also, we don't move and act all the time. Sometimes we're just constantly still.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes I've gone to the theater and watched friends of mine act. And, I mean, they're really close friends that I can go backstage and they'll ask me what did I think, and I can really intelligently say how I was affected by their performance. And I said, what does this actor look like when he's in at repose, when he's not doing anything? I said, I think you need a few more of those. And Harold would say, you don't have to act all the time. There are times when you don't act. You don't have an inclination to do. Mm. You have an inclination to stop and listen. And that's important. And, you know, they talk about actors who know how to listen because they know that listening is part of the music of life.
That's got to be very difficult, though.
It's
as
hard
saying it, I'm
because as a young
hard.
Actor, you want to be active, you want to be acting, you want to make, you got to have your intention, and you got to do that and do it. But sometimes you don't do; you just stop.
Mm. You know that as you're saying this, I'm thinking of Ginger Rogers, who was the best person to sing a song to. You think about those Ginger Rogers, Fred Astaire.
She listened like crazy.
Amazing, isn't it? When you picture,
she
wasn't
allowed
she fabulous?
Everything that was being said to register on her face, and she did nothing. She just let it all come into her.
Yeah.
Yeah, she was a gem.
Yeah, really, because a lot of people look very awkward. I think that seems like it would be very difficult to me as a non-actor to have someone sing a tune to me.
Well,
that seems difficult.
Motion picture acting, that's the other half of your performance, is how do you react to what's being said or done? That's the other half of the performance. You've got to have that. You've got to be able to listen and have the audience see what you're thinking. They'll see. If you really listen, little things happen to your face, and they know you're hearing it.
Which is interesting because in real life, a lot of people don't listen.
No, they don't.
Most people are disengaged.
And
they're not focused.
And they're just waiting to say what they want to say.
Right, or they've gone off somewhere else and they sort of clue back in. That's interesting as you're saying that. I'm thinking because you, as an actor in a movie, you could never tolerate something like that. Everybody has to be super engaged. That's very interesting as we're thinking about it. Well, what do you listen to now?
If I feel a little despondent or if I feel a little depressed or I don't like the way things are going and I perhaps I'm not too pleased with myself, I can take any of these pieces of music and put them on in the living room and take my shoes and socks off and just dance for an hour alone. Just listen and move to this music.
That's wonderful.
And it's very refreshing and it gets me out of everything. Out of everything. It's my kind of yoga.
Mm-hmm.
It just gets me out of daily life.
Mm-hmm.
And I get back to the joy of this music.
Oh, that's so lovely. I feel sorry for people that aren't music fans. I do, because a lot of people aren't. Yeah, music doesn't mean that much, and I think that they don't understand that they can get this kind of joy from it. That's fabulous. Well, this has been fun.
Yes,
great
it has.
Fun. Thank you so much for coming
scared
in.
Scared to death, but I'm glad I came.
You are so sweet for doing this. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
Today we revisited my 2004 conversation with actor Roy Scheider as part of our 20th anniversary celebration. I hope you'll join me here next time when I talk with another creative person about how jazz has inspired their life and work. I'm Judy Carmichael, the host and producer of Jazz Inspired. My production engineer is Curtis Heidoff. You can download podcasts of Judy Carmichael's Jazz Inspired from all the usual podcast platforms or listen at jazzinspired.com. Our opening music was Airmail Special, and the mid-break music is a smooth one from my CD, High on Fats and Other Stuff. The closing music is Old Fashioned Love from my CD Trio. I'm on piano with Mike Hashem on sax and Chris Flory on guitar. Judy Carmichael's Jazz Inspired is made possible with generous support from our listeners and from Steinway & Sons. Additional support is provided by Paige at 63 Main in Sag Harbor, New York, serving organic microgreens and vegetables grown on their own energy-efficient indoor and outdoor aquaponic farms. Better taste, happier planet. Visit Paige at 63 Main at opentable.com. And for more information, visit jazzinspired.com or judycarmichael.com.